From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. One of the greatest American punk rock bands ever, Sleater-Kinney, is back, and the critics say, better than ever. Fearless, independent, urgent, fun, political, feminist, and back together on tour right now. This hour on Point, the unique power of Sleater-Kinney. You can join us on air or online with this conversation is always on. Are these your punk rock icons? We're at 800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. Or join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Joining me now from Chicago are Kerry Brownstein and Corin Tucker, Sleater-Kinney's two singers and guitarists. They co-founded Sleater-Kinney at the Evergreen State College in Olympia, Washington in 1994. With drummer Janet Weiss, they have brought back the band for its first new album in a decade. It's called No Cities to Love, out now. Outside of the band, Corin Tucker also performs with the Corin Tucker Band. Kerry Brownstein is co-creator and co-star of television's popular sketch comedy show, Portlandia. Corin Tucker, thank you very much for being with us today.
Thanks for having me, Tom.
And Kerry Brownstein, welcome to On Point. Wonderful to have you here.
Thanks.
I know
glad
you're
to be here.
It's great to have you. I know you're sort of right in the middle nearly of this tour now out of Spokane, Salt Lake, and Denver, and Omaha, but Chicago tonight, so we're doubly grateful. We know you're performing tonight. Boston, Washington, New York coming up, and then off to Berlin, Amsterdam, Paris, and right on down. I am always curious with musicians, you know, you come and good artists, good musicians, to do an album for some kind of reason, you've got something to say, or you're ready to learn something maybe. Do you take more away from the making of the album in the first place, Corin, or from the tour where you get the feedback from the audience to what you've come up with?
Oh, I think that, I mean, I personally live for being on stage, and I live for that moment where we get to connect with people. That's for me the moment that all the work is meant for. So I love playing live. I love singing for people. I love being able to go out and actually touch people when we perform. So that's the moment. That's the payoff for me.
Kerry Brownstein, same. You've been working in TV and music as well, but there's no take two here. You're on stage. It's happening. Is it the feedback from the audience that brings you out?
Yeah, I think it is. And you learn something about the songs. You know, they take on sort of a different form in a live setting. You know, they almost sort of breathe in the different rooms. They become these sort of site-specific entities. And each audience is its own sort of amoeba-like form that has a different relationship to the music. So it's exciting to see the songs become transformative in those different settings.
You know, and now you add time into that, right? You guys blew up in the 90s and you brought out such loyal fans. They were just on fire for you. Now when you go out, is it a new generation? Is it that generation, you know, 20 years later? What's it feel like on stage?
Well, we feel quite fortunate. It's many generations. Certainly, there are new fans. There are people for whom No Cities to Love, our current record, is the first time they were introduced to Sleater-Kinney. So we have people in their late teens and early 20s. Then we have people that, you know, discovered the band sort of after we'd already stopped.
Yeah.
And are seeing us for the first time but know the whole catalog. And then, of course, we have the fans that were around the first time. So it's a really wonderful experience to stare out from the stage and see so many different ages and demographics out there.
Corin, is there a different vibe coming up out of that audience this time? It's been a long time since you were touring as Sleater-Kinney.
Yeah, it's really incredibly joyful. Like, people are just kind of going crazy at our shows. It's
that's
amazing.
It's gotta be fun.
It's so fun. I mean, we did a show the other night in Milwaukee.
Yeah.
And it was just, it was pandemonium. And we were like, are they here for us? They're just here for us. Wow, this is amazing.
They were just there to get out of the cold, I think.
Yeah, get out of the cold. But hey, everybody likes to perform for pandemonium once in a while. That can't be all bad. Let's hear a little bit from the new album from Sleater-Kinney, No Cities to Love. This is Surface Envy. Carrie Brownstein and Corin Tucker out front there on guitar and vocals with Sleater-Kinney. Janet Weiss with those incredible big tom-tom style drums in the background. You guys both really let loose on stage, and it's something to see. It's something to listen to. Corin, I think that's you going more out front on this particular track, Surface Envy. How do you get your voices, how do you get yours ready to do that, Corin? Do you have a ritual before the performance?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I have to warm up before every show. So there's a lot of, you know, warming up.
What are you gargling
up
before you do that?
I mean,
how
tea,
do you get it
there's
elastic
throat
like
coat,
that?
There's lemon, there's yeah. honey, yeah. there's like a whole long list, and I do them all. So it's been great. No, I've really been able to keep my voice up so far on tour. So,
Carrie, same question
crossed
for you, Carrie, because you really let it go as well. And I wonder, not just the physical of the voice, though a voice is never just physical. It's also psychological. I don't know, what kind of mental gymnastics do you do to get ready for these big performances that you deliver?
Well, for me, the last couple years, I feel fortunate with Portlandia. Those are long days, you know, when we shoot.
Yeah.
It's 12-hour days. So in some ways, it's about building up this kind of performance stamina, which I think has really been able to translate into Sleater-Kinney in terms of the physicality. And then also, I mean, I do Pilates. You know, you kind of have to, like, sort of build up this reserve. Mentally, it is just about sort of focusing, taking some time. For me, it's not actual meditation. It's more like exerting kind of this physical energy to sort of kind of harness a little bit of the chaos, you know, like push-ups or running in place and just kind of like clearing my mind of clutter.
But that cutting loose that you can hear there in Corin and in you, is that what brought you back to do this album? Were you hungry, Carrie? I mean, Portlandia, you never quite cut loose like you do with Sleater-Kinney.
Yeah, I mean, I think Sleater-Kinney really speaks to this kind of like perennial restlessness and agitation that I have, you know, like I'm someone like that's always wearing an itchy sweater or something. I mean, I feel happy in my life, but I think that when I look out in the world and am filtering some of my, you know, frustrations at what I see, like Sleater-Kinney is the voice for that. Sleater-Kinney is the tool, and it just has this kind of incessant urgency that is very, it feels necessary to tap into for me.
The album that really put you all on the map, 1997, Dig Me Out. Here's Turn It On from Dig Me Out, 1997, Sleater-Kinney. Turn It On from Dig Me Out, 1997. Corin Tucker, is there a new vibe, a new message in your dozen songs on the new album, No Cities to Love?
I think that it's, you know, it still feels really urgent to me to be in this band. And I think if anything, it's almost a feeling of not taking our moment together for granted. You know, it's being a little bit older, it's like we almost appreciate our time together a bit more because we know that it's limited and it's fleeting. And so we just almost enjoy it more.
Was it inevitable, Corin, that you'd get back together to do this, or was that an open question?
I think it was an open question. I think that we, you know, we use the word hiatus because we, you know, and in some regard, I think we all hoped that we would do something together at some point. But getting back together and doing a new album, I mean, that was kind of a big challenge. So it wasn't a given. You know, we wrote and wrote and waited until we felt like, oh, okay, we have enough songs now to make an album. So we took our time.
Yeah, hiatus, but nobody was quite sure. Carrie, were you surprised when it was back together on the road?
I suppose there was an element of surprise. I mean, I think we were always aware of the fact that we wouldn't put out a record unless we felt that it lived up to our standards. You know, we had left behind what we felt was a body of work that we could be proud of. I think part of the reason for the secrecy and the fact that we didn't announce the album in advance was because we were really waiting to see if it was going to be good enough and something that, you know, in some ways sounded like our first record. You know, I mean, like it could be our first album. So when we realized that, then we were very excited to get it out there into the world.
There is a lot more we want to learn about where you've been, how you see the world now. Carrie Brownstein, Corin Tucker, two of the three with Janet Weiss of Slater Kinney. Their new album is No Cities to Love. It's getting all kind of a hallelujah reception. They're on tour right now, Chicago tonight, and then right on down the East Coast over to Europe. Stand by in Chicago. It's great to have you there. Listeners, you can join us. Were you there with Slater Kinney when they roared up in the 1990s? Were you on board with Grill Marcus when he called them the best rock band in America? And what have you heard from the beginning out of this group? What do you hear now with the new album, No Cities to Love? 800-423-8255 is our number. 800-423-TALK. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back with Slater Kinney. This is On Point. We're talking this hour with the two founders of the legendary punk rock feminist band Slater Kinney. Carrie Brownstein is with us. Corin Tucker is with us. Janet Weiss rounds out their trio. They're on tour right now with their new album, No Cities to Love. Behind us right here from the year 2000, You're No Rock and Roll Fun from the album All Hands on the Bad One. For more or less a decade, they were on hiatus. They're very much back now. Everybody talking about the return of Slater Kinney. You can join the conversation this hour. Were you with them when they roared up in the 90s? Were you on board? Did you see them as best rock band in America? What do you hear now with the new album, No Cities to Love? Are you ready, more than ready, to ditch easy listening and go with Slater Kinney Urgency? We're at 800-423-8255. 800-423-TALK. Corin Tucker and Carrie Brownstein join us from Chicago. They're playing there tonight and then right on across the eastern U.S. and over to Europe. Andy's calling from Buffalo, New York for Slater Kinney. Andy, you're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Hi there. It's great to be with you. And I want to thank you, Corin and Carrie, for The Woods. It was, for me, an amazing album. It played in my head for about a year.
The Woods. Yeah. What about it, Andy? What about Slater Kinney and that in particular got you?
I don't know. They're a bit different, and I'm a bit different too. You know, I think you know they have a bit of a different perspective on things, and you know that's what I sympathize and resonate with.
Andy, I'm really glad for your call. Corin, Carrie, you know, it seems like there's just a lot less punk around than there was, even when The Woods came out in, 2005. What's happening with punk? Where's it gone?
I don't know. I mean, I think that sometimes we feel like a little lonely with just the style of music that's out there today.
Yeah, I mean, I think that there are, you know, punk bands out there. There's Perfect White Lung. I mean, mm-hmm. there's definitely, you know, kind of bands out there with the ethos and that the kind of like agitating, you know, sort of rough-hewn punk music. Punk to me as a modifier or descriptor doesn't totally, I guess, describe Sleater-Kinney, but I can see why people use it because there is a sort of frightening and easy quality. It's not music you can really just put on in the background. I remember the first time I heard Dig Me Out, I felt like it was just like this sucker punch coming out of a speaker. And, you know, I think a lot of music is kind of made for background music often, you know, and we just don't make background music.
You definitely do not. You've either got to sort of be in it or out
Reject
of it,
it
in a way.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And you roll with it or you don't. I was reading in Rolling Stone some of the structure that gives you your sound. And Carrie, you were describing to them how you, if I've got this right, you tune every song to C sharp and that somehow sets a tone. Explain that to us.
Well, so, you know, standard tuning is an E, and it was very arbitrary that we tuned to C sharp. Corin was playing in a band where she was the only guitar player, the only person playing any stringed instrument in the band. So when we formed, we plugged in a tuner. Her guitar happened to be in C sharp. We decided to make that our default setting.
Yeah.
But I think it serves the songs in that it creates kind of a background that has almost a sourness to it.
Mm-hmm.
So even when we're trying for something catchy, and we do, you know, we're not averse to melody. We love great melody. I think that's what is memorable about songs often.
Mm-hmm.
But there's an underlying sort of thorniness or unease to it, and I think that has served us well. And it also, for Corin, I think, creates like this place that she has to get to vocally. It really pushes her up into the upper registers octave-wise. And I think that kind of scrawling, you know, scraping sound kind of started with that tuning and how we had to learn to write around it.
Corin, describe going up there off of that bass, that C-sharp bass. Do you put yourself in an emotional, deliberate emotional zone playing off that, what Carrie calls the sourness that bass sort of what gives you as a diving board?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely feel like it's almost like an agitation.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like with this band, because of the agitation and the aggressiveness to it, it almost brings out, you know, maybe subconscious emotions that I'm not really even aware of in my everyday life. But when we start playing together, things get kind of, the walls get torn down and things come out that always surprise me. And they're pretty intense feelings. But that's part of the music and that's part of why we connect to people the way we do.
I don't know if you can separate these, but how much of that feeling is aesthetic that you're working and how much of it is consciously political, Corin?
I think there is some consciousness in it in terms of trying to connect feelings of frustration and of maybe growing up not seeing people like ourselves in positions of power and that struggle that we have to make ourselves a little bit larger than life. I mean, that's what I feel like we do with this band is that we kind of do a lot of positioning to make ourselves seem, you know, more ferocious than we might at first appear.
Is that modeling for others to come along and be ferocious behind you? Is it just like a blowback against feeling, I don't know, diminished?
I just think that that's just to me rock and roll.
Yeah.
Like that's the beauty of rock and roll is that you can walk in. Anybody can go on stage and grab an electric guitar and become another person, you know, and that to me is like, it's the incredible gift of the stage is that you can reinvent yourself. And that's what I feel like we're able to do.
Slater-Kinney's been at it for a while, back after a decade. This was the year 2000, All Hands on the Bad One, the ballad here of a lady man. Corn, you said back in 2000 that this song is sort of making fun of how people see us, how people see what you're supposed to be when you're a woman in rock. The Ballad of a Lady Man from All Hands on the Bad One. Ballad of a Lady Man. They're from All Hands on the Bad One. Corin Tucker, having said it's a little threatening to people, the woman in rock. They're out with No Cities to Love now, and it's getting great reviews. Jim in Charlottesville, Virginia. Jim, you're on the air with Corin Tucker and Carrie Brownstein.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Hi. I guess I just got a comment about this record. I've never been on board with Slater-Kinney before. I've never been a huge fan until this album came out, and I think it sounds fantastic. I think their musicianship sounds great. Production sounds great.
What's the difference? Have you changed, or did they change, Jim? Why this one?
God only knows. I mean, I've done this with other artists, too, but Carrie's guitar playing in particular, it just strikes me, and I listen to it all the time, it just sounds like there's a conversation going on in her riffs. It's like there's two sides talking to one another, and you juxtapose against Corin, too. I just think this record sounds fantastic. It sounds like a classic.
Let's hear it straight from the source. Carrie Brownstein, have you got a conversation going on in your riffs? What's being said?
Well, first of all, thank you. I mean, I think it's any artist's goal to be considered, you know, by the current album, the current endeavor. Guitar-wise, you know, I can be kind of loquacious. I feel like I almost used to play the same way I talk, which it can sometimes be circuitous and garrulous.
Yeah.
And on this album, I really wanted to streamline it and to have everything be pointed, and I worked a lot on the sounds. I wrote in a very sort of suffocating, airless basement with no reverberation, and I do feel like when you write like that, there's a desperation to be heard because you just can't. The translation becomes more difficult. So I thought if it can be understood in this room, then it can be understood on the album. And I think that's why there is kind of a clarity to it in terms of the playing.
Speaking of a conversation, I mean, you're all three so absolutely elemental to the band's sound. You've all three been doing lots of different things in the years since we last heard from you. Portlandia has been big in your life since then. How does that TV, sketch, comedy, all that sort of sending up the mores of Portland, Oregon, and its kind of crunchy culture. Is that somehow in conversation with your Slater-Kinney self, Slater-Kinney performances, Carrie? If so, how?
Well, I think I've always been an observer. And sometimes in this band, you know, Corin to me has, you know, it's kind of like the folk point of the band in terms of, like, you know, her voice says so much. And I've often in the songs kind of acted as like a translator. You know, she'll be singing one part and I'll be singing from the other perspective. And I think sometimes Portlandia carries that same through line. Where
you,
it's
you
like
and Fred Emerson doing your thing there.
Yeah, we're kind of in the outside lane looking at the center, sort of observing what we see and our relationship to it.
But the sort of dissonance of Slater-Kinney is cranked up a lot higher than in Portlandia, at least to my eye and ear.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think that they are definitely different. I'm not trying to say that they're coming from the same place. I'm very grateful for Portlandia and being able to kind of express that part of myself. But Slater-Kinney is just, it's a beast. It's a beast.
You're more of a beast than Slater Kinney, with respect, with absolute respect. But you, I mean, I guess that's part of the, that's the rock and roll joy. You can let that side go here.
Yes, my irascibility, I think, is able to be fully expressed in Slater Kinney. And, you know, I think there's just an ability to get to the sort of outer reaches of yourself and to go beyond it. And you have kind of the safety of the music, the safety of the connection between me and Janet and Corin, to kind of keep you harnessed in. But you can definitely get out there and let go of yourself in a way that you kind of can't do in a context of a television show.
It's been such a wonderful journey. Here's one beat from the 2002 album of the same name. Chorus here is a great example of the ways Corin and Gary's voices work together, play off each other. One beat.
If you think like Tom!
Bloody Arms and Oil Fields there in one beat, 2002, Slater Kinney. Amy in Whitewater, Wisconsin. Thanks for calling, Amy. You're on with Corin Tucker and Carrie Brownstein.
Hi, this is so awesome. It's thank you so much for doing this. I just saw you guys a couple of days ago in Milwaukee, and that show honestly changed my life.
How did it change your life?
It was, like, first of all, the most, like, incendiary performance I've ever seen, ever. And it was so, so cool.
So what's your question for having had your life changed 2 days ago in Milwaukee?
Yeah, I'm wondering what influenced your decision to add Katie Harkin to your tour lineup? And is this like the first time you've added a touring member?
Yeah, so on this tour, we have a fourth member. Her name's Katie Harkin, and she joins us intermittently on stage. It's something we had always talked about. I think it speaks to two things. One is, you know, we're not people that operate through the lens of nostalgia. So to us, you know, this kind of like purist, precious view of Slater Kinney, that it doesn't really exist. We are very confident in the chemistry between me and Corin and Janet. But in terms of the live setting, there were augmentations that we really wanted to implement on some of the songs.
What does Katie bring in, if I may ask, Carrie? I haven't seen the live performance. What, instrumentally or vocally, or what does she do?
Just instrumentally. She's adding some keyboard parts, some overdubs that we've always wanted to implement in the live setting, but just never did. And it's nice to have her up there for that. And then, of course, there are moments when it's just the three of us on stage.
Yeah.
But yeah, Slater Kinney kind of is its own sort of entity and its own force. And so I don't know. It's not something that we worry about in terms of dynamics. And we've actually really enjoyed having Katie with us on this tour.
We heard you there in one beat singing about fossil fuels and bloody arms and oil fields back in 2002. Amy calls and says it's an incendiary performance. What are you on fire about now, Corin?
Well, I think that one of the songs that we've done for the record is called Price Tag, and it's a song about a woman who is working a minimum wage job and raising her children, and she's having a really difficult time doing that and making ends meet. So, you know, I think that we're still kind of trying to look out for voices that aren't being heard, that people are who are in situations of trouble and difficulty and that need our help and need our empathy. And that's something that we've always kind of been interested in as a band.
You know, time passes. Do things and you have an aggravation at plenty of things, and why not? There's plenty to be aggravated about. I know all about that. Does it seem better or worse? You know, higher aggravation level in 2015 than in 2002 or 5, Corin?
I think it's just different. You know, I think that I think there's like, you know, there's different things to be concerned about. I mean, I think that, you know, socially maybe our country's like moved forward a little bit, and I think that's great. But I think that in terms of, you know, economically, income inequality to me seems like a really, like that seems like it's gotten worse and that we need to address it.
Corin Tucker, Carrie Brownstein with Slater Kinney. Please stand by in Chicago. It's great to have you. This is Modern Girl from 2005, The Woods. We'll come back and hear Price Tag, the track from the new album, No Cities to Love, that Corin just mentioned. Listeners, you can join us. Are you ready, more than ready, to ditch easy listening and go with The Urgency of Slater Kinney? We're at 800-423-8255, 800-423-TALK. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back.
Imagine having a personal library with over 150,000 book titles, plus magazine and newspapers like the New York Times and Wall Street Journal. Now imagine having a personal assistant read them to you, in the car, on the train, wherever you want. That's what it's like to have Audible.com. On Point listeners get a free audiobook of your choice and a free 30-day trial. Go to audible.com/onpoint. Choose a free title and listen. It's that easy. Go to audible.com/onpoint. That's audible.com/onpoint. Get started today.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour with the two founders of the legendary punk rock feminist band Slater Kinney. They're out with their new album, No Cities to Love. 1995, it was Don't Think You Wanna behind us here right now, self-titled album, or the band and album name at that time. They're on tour. They're joining us from Chicago today. They'll be performing there tonight, then to the eastern United States and right on across Berlin, Amsterdam, ending up in Dublin before you know it. It's been a long time since they were out. A lot of excitement about it in the camp that loves to listen, and there are plenty of those. Corin Tucker and Carrie Brownstein with us today from Chicago. Janet Weiss, of course, rounds out the band, pounds it out on drums. She's pretty terrific. And we want to get your calls to them. Caroline in Beverly, Massachusetts, you're on with Corin and Carrie. Thanks for calling.
Hi. How are you doing, Tom?
Okay.
I'm a punk girl, woman now. I'm 40, and I got into punk in the late 80s and 90s. And I remember Chicks Up Front and Riot Girls and kind of fighting for the advancement of women in the punk scene. But here it is in 2015. My husband's in a band with a female singer, a punk band, and it's still seen as an anomaly. And I was just wondering what you thought of kind of the gender equality or inequality in the punk scene today.
Glad you ask it. Carrie, Corin, what do you say?
Well, I think specifically in punk, I mean, when I look around at the musical landscape, it seems sort of less gendered identified in terms of like male, female. It seems less binary and a little bit more fluidity to it. In terms of aggressive music and punk music, you know, I think that there is something that still seems threatening and very kind of uncomfortable for people to have this kind of unabashed sort of obliteration of kindness or gentleness. Mm-hmm. You know, that
we're
that
not
still
the
seems
nurturing woman you may dream of right now at this moment.
Yes, yes.
I guess if we can pull the curtain back a little further, you know, the things you yelled and sang and stomped specifically about, in a way, what was expected of women musicians, artists in those days. But to pull the curtain more widely, I mean, Corin, the things you were yelling about and for early on, have they gotten better? I mean, speaking now as a woman in particular, not just a musician, do you see things as better? Our caller, Caroline, was a punk girl, now punk woman. Are her daughters maybe coming into a better world, woman-wise?
Well, I think that, you know, there's been progress that's been made, I think, from the past 20 years, but I feel like it's been rather hard won, you know, that things that we've been fighting for, you know, like issues like reproductive health care for women. That should be just part of health care. Like, that still seems like it's not settled yet, even though it's, you know, part of the new Obamacare. Mm-hmm. It's just – it still seems like we're still, you know, arguing for these things that are – that should be, you know, to me, seen as a given in terms of gender equality. So I still feel like we have a ways to go.
Sarah, in Oklahoma City, you're on with Corin Tucker and Carrie Brownstein. Slater Kinney.
Hi, Tom. Thank you.
Yes.
I'd like to say that I appreciate how Carrie has visibly lived her values, and I want to know if she still has time for community involvement in things like animal welfare or Rock and Roll Camp for Girls. And I just want to say I really appreciate observing that, and it's definitely inspired me.
Sarah, for those who may not follow as closely as you, what about the way she's lived her values? What examples are you thinking of?
I know that sometimes people talk about causes they care about, mm-hmm. but I've actually seen I've gone to the Rock and Roll Camp for Girls, and I've seen Corin and Carrie both there, and I just think it's awesome that people show up and be involved in these things rather than just lending their name to a cause or wearing a T-shirt.
Wow. So you've got a camper, Carrie, wanting to know, are you still at it?
I'm currently not volunteering at the Rock and Roll Camp for Girls. We did a great meet and greet with the Rock Camp in Milwaukee the other night. And participation is very important to me. I think about this in the time of social media. You know, it's one thing mm-hmm. to speak about something versus actually showing up. And I think the notion of participation and showing up has always been something that all three of us, I think, really live by and strive for. And obviously, we get busy and everyone else gets busy and can't do that. But there is such a gulf, I think, between commenting and actually doing. And doers and makers, to me, are always the most inspiring.
More than a hashtag. Of course, songs comment, too, maybe in a powerful way. Sarah, thanks for your call from Oklahoma City. Here's, Corin mentioned it earlier, but here off No Cities to Love, the new album, Price Tag. The song kind of tackles the minimum wage, life, and economic inequality. Price Tag from Slater Kinney. The Good Job's Gone is going to be raw. I don't know if they're going to play that one on the, Muzak channel at Walmart. Greg in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Greg, you're on the air. Thank you for calling.
Hi. Such a pleasure to speak to all of you. This is wonderful. I got to say first, I love the new record. I just think it kills. And I'm really looking forward to seeing you guys here in Philly pretty soon. I just want to know about the thought process that goes into choosing some of the older material that will make up the rest of the set. Is there some songs you don't relate to anymore, or is there some that you're looking forward to playing when you were rehearsing and whatnot? I just wanted to have you talk about that thought process, if you would.
Oh, that's interesting. When you rummage around in the old chest in the attic to pull out what you're going to back No Cities to Love tracks with, how do you choose?
Well, I think that we actually went through and played a lot of the material and played it next to the new songs and just, you know, checked out how it sounded back to back. And then from there, we were like, oh, this one goes really well with the new material. Or this one, yeah, I'm not sure this is our strongest song off this record. So yeah, we actually played some of it and picked our favorites from there.
Corin, subject-wise, is that part of the selection process as well or not?
Yeah, I mean, I think it is, but it's to me, it's like which voices are the strongest out of all the characters and the stories that we've kind of told over the years. Like, what at this point when we return to it do we just love throwing ourselves into again? That's kind of what draws us in.
Yeah, no, that's pretty terrific. Greg, I appreciate your call from Philadelphia. And here we've got the economic piece front and center in Price Tag. I wonder if you feel the same energy around that you felt around the issues you picked up earlier in the 90s, now that you're on tour. Does that have, you know, the politicos listening in may want to know, you know, is this really playing at a gut level now with American audiences?
Yeah, I mean, I think that... You know, I really see that, like, from me, my personal life, raising two kids in Portland, Oregon. Mm-hmm. The economic recession hit us really hard, and I've watched other people that I know raising kids really struggle, trying to make all the pieces fit together, and I really feel for that struggle, and I think that we need to think about that in terms of how we're setting ourselves up, and making a lifestyle for people with families in the U.S.
Price tag goes right to it on the new album, No Cities to Love. This was Jumpers from the Woods. This was the last album before the hiatus. The AV Club called this album quasi-psychedelic, classic rock sounding.
The only substance is the fog.
Jumpers in 2005, Golden State, little nod to Mark Twain there. Jeb in Kingsborough, Massachusetts. Jeb, you're on the air.
Hi, how you doing? Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Hi, Corin and Carrie. I just wanted to say thank you for your contribution over the years. I first heard Cedar Kinney in high school, and it blew my world wide open. I've always been a fan of punk, but it came along at a time when I really needed to hear it. I think the way you guys bring in aggressive elements to prettier music and vice versa was something that I hadn't quite heard at the time, and it's always stuck with me.
Jeb, do you play? Do you sing? Are you a musician yourself?
I do, yes. I play in a band in Boston called Doom Riders, and I guess you could call us a hardcore or metal band, but I've always been attracted to when musicians can do things a bit differently than everybody else, and I try and do that sometimes to my own detriment, admittedly, but the fact that they have two guitars and drums rather than guitar, bass, drums like everybody else is formula. There are a lot of things about Cedar Kinney that have always stuck out to me, and I've appreciated.
Jeb, thanks for your call. Corin, Carrie, Triumph, you've done it. I mean, you've been out now. You're now the Doom Riders are following you.
That's awesome.
It's so awesome.
That is pretty cool. One more right here. Mark in Naugatuck, Connecticut. Mark, you're on.
You know, I just wanted to say that one of the things, like Jeff, that I've always appreciated about Cedar Kinney is that they seem to draw from a wide variety of musical influences. In fact, I remember when Carrie had her Monitor Mix blog on NPR, I remember one time she tried to embrace the music of Fish, and she went to a record store, and I could totally relate to her when she was like, oh, I've got Parliament on one side, I've got the Rolling Stones on the other side, and Fish in the middle. Do I really want to go with the middle? And I was like, oh, no, I don't know if I could embrace that. But a couple of years later, a friend of mine dragged me to a Fish concert, and I actually enjoyed it. And I could understand how, like, Carrie, you know, through her YouTube videos, was able to appreciate what they were trying to do. I think that's, like, what makes a great rock band is a band that doesn't stick to a certain formula, that's willing to embrace and explore other types of music.
Hey, Mark, I appreciate your call. Let's hear it straight off the latest album to take us right where they are now. This is A New Wave from No Cities to Love. Slater Kinney.
Inventor, own color of skull.
a new wave from No Cities to Love. So, Corin, how do you look at Slater-Kinney now? Is this going to be a once-a-decade thing? You all will catch up and compare notes and bring it out? Or maybe never again? Or time tells?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's an open question right now. You know, we made this record. We just opened the door and said, we want to make music together again. We know our time is limited. We know other people have a lot going on. We're going to put out this record and make it the best we can absolutely make it and play it for people. And that's really all that we have planned for right now.
Very important question from Luca, Carrie. How do you feel about Slater-Kinney tattoos, flattering or weird?
Flattering. I mean,
Have you seen the spectrum of fans who have you inked into their lives?
Yes, I have. And I mean, it's a little surreal. I won't lie, but I think that, I mean, I'm honored that, you know, that people feel so close to our music that they would permanently put that on their body.
When you jump across the pond, I know you've done it before, to Europe, does the tone change when you get into Berlin and Amsterdam and Paris and Glasgow, Dublin? Different feeling?
It's so cliche to say, but music just kind of translates. That's the beauty of it. There's not a lot of code switching. We just get there and play our songs, and people throw their hearts and passion right back towards us. And it's its own language. So cliche, but it's true.
Corin, you've got two kids now, rocker. How do you deal with that when you're traveling?
Well, they actually are with us right now in Chicago.
Oh, great.
And it's great, you know. I mean, my daughter's never seen Slater-Kinney, and so she thinks it's awesome. She's like, I'm ready to get on stage with you, Mom.
Talk about mind-blowing. Wait, that's my mom?
Yeah, yeah. So it's pretty fun to have them along.
Well, that's pretty great. And it's been pretty great talking with you this hour. I really want to thank you both. I know you've got a show tonight. I wish you good luck with it. Corin Tucker with Slater-Kinney in Chicago. Corin, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
And Carrie Brownstein, you know her from Portlandia, and, of course, Slater-Kinney. Carrie, thanks for joining us. Good luck with the tour.
Thank you.
Give our best to Janet Weiss, your terrific drummer. Just terrific. The new album is No Cities to Love. We'll go out with Words and Guitar from 1997's Dig Me Out. Listeners, you can continue the conversation and get the On Point podcast at our website, onpointradio.org. Follow us on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Great to have you right here. I'm Tom Ashbrook with Slater-Kinney. This is On Point.
On Point is a production of WBUR Boston and NPR.